audio on demand from Vision Christian Media.
The story.
And one time I was sitting at my mate's uni party and a girl walks in, her name's Lizzie, and I used to work my first job in Harvey Bay. She was sold out, on fire for the Lord, and she would always nag on me to get to church and youth. I'm like, nah, not interested, you know, I've got my own plan. And she had a go at me. She's like, why do you wear a cross around your neck if you don't, you know, live it? That stuck with me. And all these times I've realized how many times God moved on people and then people listened and obedient and reached out.
G'day, I'm Jimmy Colfax. Welcome to The Story. Well, last time we heard how Mike Lane was going through somewhat of an existential crisis when he felt led by God to learn how to play the didgeridoo. This turned out to be a tremendous success as he went on to tour the world with his band River Tribe. This time, Mike will introduce us to his good friend and fellow didgeridoo player, Isaac Harrison, who just happens to be the founder of his own renewable energy company. I don't want to give too much away, but I will let you know that today's chat involves a Rolls-Royce, an electric car, and faith in the Lord. Once again, here's Mike Lane and Eric Scatterbo in our Melbourne studios, and they're chatting about how their first interview almost didn't occur.
Lane, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Eric. Good to see you again.
Glad to have you on the program again. And now, before that interview, we were trying to pick out a date to get to the studio, and you said, oh, there might be a conflict because I might be going to pick up a Rolls Royce.
Yes. Doesn't everyone do that?
And that kind of got my attention. I mean, I know you were a success with River Tribe, but I didn't think it was that successful.
Yeah, I was given a Rolls Royce. Which is...
You were given a Rolls-Royce.
Yeah. So Isaac will come into the interview shortly and I guess fill in the gaps on the story, but it just came from an idea I was throwing around with Isaac a little while ago to help promote his... He's an Indigenous entrepreneur and runs a company called Bunjil Energy. Mm-hmm. And initially it started out as an idea just to help him promote his business, his company. It kind of grew out of that. It's got a lot bigger than that, but yeah, it's an interesting story that we're given a car.
Well, you mentioned Isaac. At this point, we'd like to welcome to the program Isaac Harrison.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you with us. And so this picking up a Rolls-Royce was part of a project you're involved in. What's the background?
Yeah, so it was an idea at the time. Mike has a friendship with David Bromley, who's an Australian artist and some could say an icon. So yeah, Mike's I've done some work with him, and he suggested converting one of his cars to electric. And we've actually just had a staff member leave for this company in Melbourne that's doing a lot of electric conversions. So there was a few synergies that were popping up, and what started as a conversation, then a visit out to Daylesford, has now really flourished into a viable project.
So. Wow. So let's just back up a little bit. So obviously, Mike and yourself, Isaac, you're good friends.
Yep.
I understand that you play the didgeridoo together.
Yeah.
And you have your own energy company,
yep,
Bunjil Energy.
Yeah.
And so this whole Rolls-Royce conversion to electric car is a promotional idea for your company?
Yeah, it was really a marketing in a way. There's a show that used to play called Bush Mechanics, and follows,
oh yes, I just watched it the other day.
So yeah. Follows a group of Indigenous lads who, you know, go on an adventure, and they come across their car breaks down, and they use, you know, ingenuity in the bush, you know, like branches for new axles and stuff like that.
Yes.
And it's quite incredible. And the reality is, a lot of those Indigenous people out there can do that and have the brain and the willpower to put those things together. Very extremely resourceful people, Indigenous people. You know, we've used the land's resource as is for, you know, thousands of years. So, you know, I was very inspired by that, and I thought there's got to be a way where we could spark this project and catch attention of a lot of Indigenous Australians, you know, with the lowest socio-demographic in Australia. We have the highest suicide rates and the highest incarceration, domestic violence, you know, you name it. And And a lot of that's from the scars of colonization passed down through generations to get where we are today. So I thought that would be a great way to bring a bit of interest mm-hmm. for Indigenous people looking at starting a trade in what I like to call the new era. You know, that's renewable energy, that's electric vehicles, that's, you know, free energy, that's energy from the sun, the wind, from the tides. It's everywhere around us, and we've had a centralized model in our heads mm-hmm. or what we've just accepted as convenience before, at a cost to bringing pollution to, you know, God's creation. And so it's up to us now to transition into better stewards of the earth, of mm-hmm. you know, the, you know, it says the all of creation groans and travails waiting for the sons of God to be made manifest. And I think that's up to us now, sons and daughters, to get involved and make a change. And that's my inspiration for the business and for the project. But yeah, to throw it back to the start.
Yes, we'll get back to the whole Rolls-Royce thing. But you yourself met Mike because you play
Didgeridoo. Yeah, so I'm a Queenslander. So I'm from a small town called Hervey Bay in mm-hmm. Queensland.
Yep, been there.
So my mother is Aboriginal Australian. She's a Cubby Cubby and Birri Gubba woman. So Sunshine Coast and Eyre is where our lineage is. Mm-hmm. We've also got an ancestor who was a Kanaka taken from the South Sea Islands, who was taken from Vanuatu to New Caledonia to the Torres Straits and then into Queensland to cut cane, build railroads, and pretty much indentured servants, you know, similar to what they would have done in America. So he marries into an Aboriginal tribe on the Sunshine Coast. Mm-hmm. And then after a couple of generations, we find ourselves growing up in Townsville and then in Hervey Bay. So my father's white Australian, and you know, his lineage is his father committed suicide and was physically abusive. His mother was also came from an abusive home. He was an alcoholic before he became a Christian, and my mother was the same statistic. You know, abused as a young, sexually abused as a young child in a community. A lot of alcohol, a lot of violence. So what broke it for us was my nana and my mum became Christian. The Salvation Army has a long heritage with Aboriginal people in this nation, and they might see my nana actually ran away from church. Her parents were Salvation Army officers, which stopped her from being taken to a mission. Mm. But she left that lifestyle and pursued whatever was going, fell in love with someone else, and much of my grandfather had 11 kids. And so she went back to the Lord, and my mum came back at 13 and dedicated her life. And she said to God, two promises. God, I want to marry a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man, which is my father, and they're still married today. And the other one was, because she saw the trouble our people went through, she said, I never, ever want to have to apply for a job. And my mum has never applied for a job in her life. She job straight out of university, and she's always been offered jobs, and now she runs her own organization which gets women out of domestic violence situations in Brisbane and Logan.
Wow.
So in Queensland. So that's my mum. My mum's a role model, same as my dad, you know, as cheesy as that sounds. So yeah, going back further, so from my nana, her grandfather was a Scottish stockman who came obviously from Scotland, and he ran away with the maid, an Indigenous woman of that area. Back in those days, that was a big no-no, mixed relations. So the government came in, removed him, gave him a slap on the wrist, took my great-great-great, whatever it is, Polly Smith, took her to Yarrabah Mission outside of Cairns, and then they separated the children. And so the children was my nana's father.
So his wife was taken away from him?
Yeah, so you'd be forcibly removed, yeah. Because that was a big no-no. Those, and if you go on Wikipedia and Google Australian Indigenous Acts, you know, there's acts on rightfully shooting Aboriginals, there's acts on, you know, removing children of mixed blood. You know, I would be counted as a half caste, so I would have no place among white Australia, and I'd have no place among Indigenous Australia. You know,
I mean, I'm just trying to get my head around. His children were taken away from him.
Yeah,
his wife.
So, yeah, it's quite common for Indigenous people to know that and share that.
Did they ever get back together?
So as far as we know, they never found each other. Then she spent a lot of her time walking up southeast and north Queensland looking for him.
Oh, wow.
And she was even my uncle Les, who's an elder, he said she was walking in the 80s. She could walk kilometres, you know, just keep walking. And she never found him. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it is sad, and it inspires me to, you know, be very thankful for where I am today, because there's a lot of Indigenous people, yeah, their story doesn't change for the better. It just gets worse.
And getting to your personal story.
Yeah, so I grew up in a good home. You know, I grew up in Harvey Bay, a good town. And for me, I was always played my sports. You know, I played semi-professional soccer when I moved to Brisbane. I thought that was the way forward. And I went on a bit of a bender. You know, I broke my arm. I've sort of lost track of the values. And I ended up walking through the city, Queen Street in Brisbane, one night, you know, coming back from a late night. And I heard street preachers, actually, you know, fire and brimstone sort of guys. And if you come from a Christian home, you sort of know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so were you raised in the church? Did you know about
faith? We grew up in COC, Christian Outreach Center. And then my uncle was discipled by Clark Taylor. And he started his own church in around Harvey Bay area. So I grew up with a very much a country church sort of situation. Mm-hmm. So, super thankful. And so for me, I sort of went away from, you know, God's truth and backslid and, you know, was serving myself primarily and mm-hmm. looking after number one. and more and more I realized how much of a selfish kid I was. Anyway, so I saw these street preachers and one of those guys, so this is in Brisbane City, one of those guys was actually from Harvey Bay. And knew my family, mm-hmm. and wow. Within about two sentences, we worked out why we were both from the same town. And the question he asked me that night was, you know, what are you doing out here? And it wasn't like, what are you doing? Like overlording it on me. He just asked me like, well, what are you doing out here? And I was just like, I don't know, like just walking around, really getting some Hungry Jacks. And so that was my first encounter. He invites me to church, you know, a non-denominational, very reformed church, which is the complete opposite of a country charismatic church. And so I said, no, I'm all good. Thanks, mate. So anyway, the next week I get a knock on the door. It's a salesman trying to sell insulation back in the insulation scheme. I'm like, no, thanks. I'm all good. On his half turn, he says, I was right if I pray for you. And I was like, that's a bit random, but yeah, why not? So he lays hands and he prophesies and says about, you know, my past and where I've come from, you know, and it just blew me out of the water because I really respect that, you know, supernatural stuff. And so I went downstairs. My brother's like, looked at me like, you look like you've seen a ghost. I was like, oh, I think I saw an angel. I don't know. I didn't even know how to label that because I've never had that level of encounter before. Mm-hmm. He invites me to his church. It was in Sunshine Coast, so an hour north of Brizzy. And I'm like, maybe it's too far. So maybe I started thinking about this other guy I met the week before. And then the third week I'm at work and my brother comes to visit and we go down and get some food at the Jindalee DFO, direct factory outlet downstairs. I was working at Fitness First, the gym at the top at the time. And I walked, I started seeing people from my hometown. I was like, what's going on here? And they were the youth group from Harvey Bay coming down for like a Youth Alive concert or something that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I can't escape these people. and then I hear, hey brother. And I look over and there's a indigenous guy, a black fella from Harvey Bay who knows my family as well. He says, hey brother, can I pray over you? Can I pray? And I was just
he
like,
just randomly came
just
up to
randomly
you.
To me and my middle brother, Kashaya.
After all these things had been happening.
Yeah, so this is the third week, fourth week, so it's all in 1 month.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fine, I give up. So I bow my head.
The Lord is after you.
Yeah, and then what I realized is all those kids I saw in the shopping center, the youth group that were on tour, they just all came and laid hands and prayed. And some of them I knew from, they're a couple of grades younger than me at school, and some of them, their siblings I knew. And so it was really, you know, it nearly makes me cry now, but you know, it's like he came after me, you know, and I realized back in my life how many times he came after me. You know, one time I was sitting at my mate's uni party and a girl walks in, her name's Lizzie, and I used to work my first job in Harvey Bay. She was sold out on fire for the Lord, and she would always nag on me to get to church and youth. I'm like, nah, not interested, you know, I've got my own plan. And she had a go at me. She's like, why do you wear a cross around your neck if you don't, you know, live it? And it's pretty bold.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I was like, how dare she say that? But then I was just like, I like gritted my teeth and I was like, whatever, because I liked her. She was cool girl, and a good friend. So, but that stuck with me. And all these times I've realized how many times God moved on people and then people listened in obedience and reached out.
You're listening to The Story. Today, Eric Scatterbo is once again chatting with musician Mike Lane, who has introduced us to his friend and fellow didgeridoo player, Isaac Harrison. Today, Isaac is sharing his story. We found out that he's an Indigenous Australian and also the founder and director of his own renewable energy company. We'll hear more of Isaac's story when we return.
If this program has highlighted something you'd like prayer for, we'd love to pray for you. Call 1-800-PRAY-FOR-ME. That's 1-800-772-936. It's a free call. Or text 0401 132 888.
Hi, I'm Jimmy Colfax, and this is The Story. Our guest today is once again musician Mike Lane, who has introduced us to his friend and fellow didgeridoo player, Isaac Harrison. Isaac is an Indigenous Australian and also happens to be the founder and director of his own renewable energy company. Isaac is sharing his story with us today, and next, we're going to find out what happened when he decided to go back to church.
And so I went to this Reformed church, which is really different from what I grew up with, and in fact, it was an eye-opener, but I really respect their emphasis on holiness and soberness, and they were just great people, you know, surgeons, doctors, pilots, and mm-hmm. it was such a different change. You know, you never hear a tithe message. it was awesome. So then I ended up at Sunny Coast. I went to this other church, that second guy that I met. Mm-hmm. I went to that church, spent a good couple of years on the Sunshine Coast. So I got a trade there. So I got a trade, and a guy at that church that I was a part of had a startup in renewable energy.
Oh, okay. And, so that's how
and this
that
is
all
how
began.
The story, okay, yeah. Yeah. And he says to me, you know, I've got this startup and it's going to be a big industry and, you know, want to be a part of it. So at the moment, I like just secured a trade. I'm just qualified. You know,
how
got
old
my
are you?
Work van. At this stage, I'm 20.
Okay.
20,
just 21. Young guy. Just starting.
Yeah, young guy. So I'm like, oh, do I really want to leave where I'm doing my trade?
Mm-hmm.
And so I prayed intensely into it, and then I said, yeah, let's do it. So I was like the fourth, fifth employee. I was like the third in the office. By the time I
getting in on the ground floor, it sounds
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah. So by the time I left to Melbourne to run the Victorian branch of it, we had 30, 40 employees, and he went from, you know, turning over 200,000, turning over like 6 mil within like
wow.
2 years. So all online, all on eBay, you know, centralized location, Sunny Coast sending out. And that was, to me, was incredible. I saw miracles in business, which were like ridiculous. So we'd have customs hold a shipping container, and the guys are like, there's no way we're going to get it. All these customers are going to miss out. And without any word, we'd rock in the morning and the shipping container would be there at the door.
Wow.
The truck dropped it off. So they got a call from customs to pick it up at some ridiculous time. And
was he a Christian as well?
He was a Christian, yes. It was a kingdom business. And a lot of the other people that work in there weren't. And they would be like, oh, this happens too much. It's freaking me out. And so I was just like, wow, like God likes making people rich. No, I was just amazed because I was like, God cares about our livelihood. You know, it's just not like a kingdom stuff. So yeah, then I moved to Melbourne.
And you were growing as a Christian?
Yeah, I was growing more and more. Yeah, I was more and more tested. You know, when I did my trade, I probably had the hardest time as a Christian. I worked dead end jobs in factories where I got like, you know, just verbally abused and like just crazy stuff, you know. And
because of your heritage, or
I think a bit of both. And there was one place I remember, there was a factory that just did salad dressing bottles for Coles, and all I did was put lids on it. And this is before I got my trade, and then yeah. I ended up in renewable energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being at like my lowest, and I'd drive home and I'd be like, God, like I felt like you brought me out to the desert to die. Like I've left Brisbane, you know, I felt to move to Sunshine Coast, be a part of this church group, this organization, which I met Daniel Hagen, which is now my pastor in Frankston. And I said, what is going on? Like, this is the worst. And that's where I learned the most character, you know.
It sounds like you weren't having the abundant life.
I was not. Far from having. Far. You know, I couldn't pay my bills. I was behind my rent by like 2 months. I got to the point where me and my roommate, who also worked part-time dead-end jobs, we would go to Salvation Army in Maroochydore and pick up bread and buy butter and milk and tea. And that would be our diet for the
week. So that doesn't get much lower than that.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that we're eventually going to be talking about a Rolls Royce, but
yeah. And my parents came to visit, and I stopped playing soccer and I stopped pursuing playing on a professional level. I was playing semi-pro, so I was getting paid per game. And so I stopped that because I felt like God calling me away from that. And I'd done it since I was 6 years old. And as I left that, like my parents, and I left a job at Qantas as well. So my parents are like, he's given up semi-pro soccer. And he's given up a job at Qantas to bum around Sunny Coast you know, any Salvation Army bread. So they really, on the physical level, thought, man, you've like turned it in, like you've lost it, you know, you've become too spiritual, you've become over mm-hmm. the top. And but I just knew in here, like in my life, I've always done things like 100%, mm-hmm. 100% for myself or 100% for my flesh, you know. But when I signed up to following, you know, Jesus and following his teachings, it was going to be 100%, mm-hmm. you know, that's just the way I operate. And
so you were convicted and felt led.
Yeah.
To be on the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah.
And even though it wasn't working out too well.
Yeah, it wasn't initially. Working out too well. And but in that time, you know, we were on the streets and even in a workplace, I got to lay hands and pray for people. Probably one of the most profound things I've ever had, a Jehovah Witness boy on the factory line. We're doing the bottles. So I was literally like praying in tongues and singing songs and just praying all day because it was so loud, no one could hear you.
Oh, wow.
And so the guy next to me, he grew up Jehovah Witness and he left the church. So all his community don't talk to him. That's how that ran.
So he's kind of excommunicated.
He's excommunicated and he's, oh, I don't believe any of that religionist, that rubbish and blah, blah, blah. So as an Aboriginal, you grow up with witch doctors and magic and spiritualism. That's very normal. When I got to school, I never knew what an atheist was until like Australian, because I'm an atheist. I believe in nothing. And I was like, you should.
Because you've seen.
Because I've seen it. I've seen people walk out of deathbeds and ICU 2 days later. I've seen people have, you know, respiratory failure and then it just comes back to life, you know, the kidneys come back to life, people hit by a bus and come back to life. I've, you know, my adopted sister was shaken, baby thrown across the room, you know, torn retinas, was written off with all sorts of things and she's completely fine after just praying.
Wow.
So I've seen it. And so this guy was like teasing me and mocking me and he said, "All right, you think, where was I born?" It was the weirdest thing. And in my head, it just, the words Rockhampton popped in my head and I said, "Rockhampton." So I don't know if I guess or Holy Spirit sovereignly just goes bang. And I said, "Rockhampton." And he just looked at me, looked back at his station, bowed his head and just started back to work and didn't say anything the whole shift. And I was like, oh, well, I guess I was wrong, you know, because he was just like, oh, this guy's an idiot. And he comes back later and he goes, "How did you do that?"
Wow.
And I was just like blown. And so in that time, I had these encounters where I had nothing on the physical. I had no money to my name, was behind my rent. And then, yeah, I spent that season. Then I spent a season with the trade and I got persecuted hard. You know, there was a guy whose best known mate was Christian and he believed Christianity took his best mate away. So he just had it out on me.
So he's all angry.
Yeah, my boss was ex-Navy, you know, really old school, an alcoholic, and he just had it, like everyone had it out on me. So it was a real test. And eventually when I got a job at this Kingdom business, I took every day like with such thankfulness because, you know,
yeah, so because you had seen the alternative.
I've seen the alternative and it's not fun, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how I ended up in Melbourne. So the church I was part of, the guy, he moved back to Melbourne because he's a Melbourner. And he said to me, "Actually, we need a position with our youth, you know, someone to run the youth. And, you know, would you be interested?" Also play, you know, I was playing Yidiki, which is the didgeridoo, professionally. So things were winding up there in the Sunshine Coast, both the church that I was a part of and work-wise, it was feeling like end of the road. There wasn't much more for me to do.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. So you're in Victoria now.
Yep.
And you're eventually going to meet this guy over here, Mike Lane, because you both play.
We'll get there. Sorry, Mike.
And things kind of take off, and you're now the founder of your own energy company.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time for this first edition. We'd like to invite you to come back and have a part two of this conversation. Would that be all right?
Yeah.
Mike, you going to come back too?
Sounds great.
Okay, as we just heard, there's more to Isaac's story, but we've run out of time for today's program, so we invite you to join us again next time to find out how Isaac becomes the founder and director of his own renewable energy company called Boonjil Energy. Also, we'll hear more about Mike Lane and Isaac's plans to convert a Rolls-Royce into an electric car. It's interesting stuff. And before we go, I just wanted to mention that I thought it was great how God kept on bringing more Christian people into Isaac's life, to the point that he could no longer deny that God was pursuing him. As the Bible says, Jesus came to seek and to save the lost. Well, thanks for joining us for this first part of Isaac's story. Until next time when we'll hear more, I'm Jimmy Colfax, encouraging you to share your story with someone today.
Next time on The Story.
I got a call from an Indigenous man of God from the city, works in the city, told me about opportunities for Indigenous businesses to work with the government. I pitched, you know, four investors. And eventually the investor I chose said the words, "I feel there's a shift with Aboriginal people and I want to be a part of it." And that was God saying, "This is the man that you will journey with, and that's my business partner."
Isaac Harrison is an Indigenous Australian and a didgeridoo player. He joins us once again to share more of his story and how he became the founder and director of his own renewable energy company. All that and more next time.
The Story. The Story. Just another way Vision is connecting faith to life. This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.